are back with episode 823 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. I can't wait to dive into this. I hope we have enough time today, John. So let's hurry up and get quick to it.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's just a lot to go through.
Well, it's not quite our record of shows for discussion. I think that actually the lowest limit was 3 one time back somewhere in the 200s. But this definitely is a contender. And I think, what are we at, 5, 6?
Six. Yes. Six each week, which we'll cover them kind of as groups, as we've done before, just how we feel about the progress of the last couple of weeks. The funny thing is that the list is only going to get smaller. although, you know, that just gives us time to binge a few shows like Defenders and The Tick and so on that are coming out very shortly. But just as a programming note, I don't know what the heck's going on above my head. I think there is some kind of dog race going on. So sorry if you hear that. Programming note. So after this week, which will have 2 episodes, we will come back in 2 more weeks, probably with another couple episodes. And then we are off for a couple weeks because of conventions. There is, of course, the weekend of Dragon Con, which just about everyone on VOG will be off that week because we will all be down there, at least a good number of us. Rob, Bobby, me and Gary. So, yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll record even. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's possible. We'll see if we do. It might be something similar to what we did last time where it was more of a VOG network recording is on somebody's show versus or a special on YouTube than one of our episodes, for instance. But certainly we'll see what the group can do. And then the following weekend, I'm going to be away at Colossal Con East in the Poconos. So I have a feeling that I'm not going to have time between those two conventions to really be prepared to record. So 2 weeks from this week, and then probably 3 weeks after that, we'll resume. By then, we're going to have shows for the fall starting up. So that's probably a good time for us to wrap up our summer, look forward to the fall, and kind of get back onto a more regular schedule because material starts to come fast and furious in the later part of September. Which will be interesting because I'll be away actually the last week of September in Europe. But
well, show off.
I have my ways. If I could keep up when I was in China last summer, I can keep up when I'm in Europe. But yes, it's a little bit crazy scheduling wise, but it's all good stuff and fun stuff and stuff that we're doing with our fellow co-hosts. Unfortunately, I was actually supposed to be away this weekend hanging out with the folks from Anime Jam Session, but I just could not do that many trips in late summer. Just not financially feasible. So I will see the folks, though, down in Atlanta in 3 weeks. But right now, we're trying to talk about the episodes from the last 2 weeks. So let's go ahead and have a spoiler warning first.
Yes, this is your official spoiler warning. As we discuss these multitude of shows, we will occasionally reveal life, who lives, who dies, who kisses one another, and possibly some major plot points as well. We do this just so that we can have a free and open discussion. Don't take it personally if we break your hearts or get your hopes up unintentionally. It's not really meant for that thing, but it might happen anyway. So just if you just hang in there and listen through if you'd like. If not, put us on pause, follow up on some really good shows, and then come back and listen to what we say.
That's right, and we're conveniently giving you 2 weeks to catch up.
how much better can we be? Yeah.
That's right, we are a giving podcast, that's right. all right, well, let's see then. We might as well start, if I look here at my list. We could do it by jumping right into the big guns, but I think we'll go ahead and talk about some other shows first. Gary, what's the show that you would like to talk about first on this list? Do you want to get into Killjoys or Dark Matter? Which one jumps out at you right now?
Let's start off where we can both dive into it, and let's go with Killjoys.
Okay, because for the first week that we're talking about, that was pretty much at the top of the list. And we have 2 episodes. We have Season 3, Episode 5, Attack the Rack, where the Killjoy rebels take drastic measures to clean house, a secret ops attack against their own rack. And then that's followed up by Necropolis Now, Season 3, Episode 6, where Johnny faces off with someone from his past, and Dutch faces her own personal hell. So both episodes came with pretty high praise. The first episode got an average of 9, and the second episode got an average of 8.33. So let's see. I'll just go ahead and read some of Edmund's comments. He says, after the preambles, great to see the new team flex its muscles for better and then worse. And then in the second episode, he says, yeah, Hull and B-Twisted. Absolute power twists absolutely, perhaps. And definitely felt like a Hannibal situation. I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me. Which I mentioned just a squee about Fuller ramping up Hannibal development after 2-year hiatus. Wow, somehow we got a Hannibal commentary in the middle of our Killjoys discussion. But Gary, how about you? What did you think about these two episodes?
Oh, I really love how they're fleshing into the Raxmore. We'd always get a little bit of information, but I feel I'm starting to get a sense of what it actually of much more of the structure than I ever did before. It was ingenious how they switched so quickly, in my opinion, from sort of just trying to discover what's going on with the Hullen to now all of a sudden building armies. And it sort of took me off guard that it switched around so quick, and I didn't see it coming. But at the same time, I'm going along with the ride, and it was really an interesting idea that they had the structure that they chose to grab at least people that they felt were honest, diligent heads of their own racks, and trying to clean up the rack and actually make the whole rack an army. And given the ability of a rack agent to go in and out of places that other people can, it's a pretty good idea. So I love the premise. I was surprised what happened when racks started blowing up. Honestly, it's almost as if at least a good chunk of their army is gone. But then I get the sense that there's still other racks that survived, which seemed to go against what they were showing when they went back to the Hullen. And what's her name is talking about? Oh, how she wants Dutch all alone at the end, and she blew up all the other racks. I guess maybe it was just the guys they had, because I don't think the whole system's gone. So it's sort of odd. I'm scratching my head a little bit. I feel like they really wanted to write some things and they didn't think it through. But it was still a heck of a good ride. I'm really loving this sort of amp up to fight. It's we go from now like sort of peeking through a window to see what's going on to having them basically us running right up to the Hullen at this point. And we're in that stretch where they're running to the attack point. So it's really exciting. It's ramped up. We still have we're still getting a little bit of personality development, which I was sort of surprised at, as Dutch was killed, I guess, the head of her rack, technically, the woman was. Yeah. That was really interesting. I guess I'm going to say because Dutch felt so remorseful over it, she's killed pretty rampantly when needed, and the fact that she seems so guilt-laden over it struck me as a little bit odd. And I can't quite, put onto it. I didn't think she would be that upset over it, but she is. And, I'm not quite sure what to think of that, John. Do you know what I mean? I mean, she's killed all over the place, and I mean, there's going to be casualties in this war one way or the other. And I just don't, I didn't understand her depth of, of remorse over this. Not that she couldn't be, but it seemed a lot for her.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a little bit of shortcutting taking place in the character development sometimes, for that matter, even in the plot development. But I feel like in this particular case, what they're trying to kind of make the point of is, I guess, that she's what's the way to put it? I guess that she's feeling that she was so intent on taking out the Hullen that had infiltrated the wreck that she was trying to preserve the humans, and it just, this was someone who was important to her that she felt betrayed by, and then for it to turn out that she was so wrong about the situation is as much part of it as anything else. Just that she miscalculated, I think that that's where it comes into play. That's how I interpret it.
Yeah, fair enough. And
but as I said, the one thing about this show is that it is definitely, it feels more like an kind of like an adrenaline fueled storyline. It really just keeps moving, and they do gloss over some things, and I'm tempted to be annoyed by that. But then I think to myself, you know what? I'm just enjoying the heck out of it. So I'm going to stop trying to overthink this show. It really does just make you want to like it, almost. I think that it has a really nice positivity to it in that regard, that you just want to have fun watching the show and kind of letting the characters speak for themselves to a certain extent. I know there are some people analyze this show quite a bit and still find a lot to enjoy from it, so I think there is a lot there. But to me, it's one of those shows that I really just don't feel the need to overthink my enjoyment of it. I love the characters. The actors do a great job with them. The sense of humor is really there. It's kind of irreverent, and yeah, I think that they can be forgiven the occasional shortcut in the characterization.
Yeah, but, no, you step on a good point. You suggest a good point. Yeah. Constantly, I feel like I'm dropped into things in the show. Yes. It's not that you're spoon-fed it. You're, like, sort of literally dropped into the pool. Here you go. Yep. And I think that is part of the energy of the show. And, like you said, I don't know of anybody who isn't enjoying this show, be it as a guilty pleasure or, as you said, some people who analyze the heck out of it. I know it was interesting to see, I guess, what is a official Rack funeral, too?
Yeah.
And how they manipulate the warrant was all. I thought that was a nice way to turn the catchphrase to what it was. Although that was another thing. You just felt thrown into that whole thing. We didn't know why they went there, but everybody sort of assumed that they did go there. We even got to see dress uniforms for the Rack.
Yes.
And too close to con season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Way too close.
I know.
Dress uniforms are so nice. Anyway. But yes, I think that Killjoys is really killing it this season. Especially these two episodes really seem to hit all cylinders. And I have to say that all of these episodes that we're talking about, all these shows are really basically hitting an 8 or above once again. So these are the cream of the crop for us this summer. So that being said, Gary, how about Dark Matter? How is that show going right now?
You know, don't get me wrong, especially with, as we were just talking about Killjoys, there is a rabid split in fandom, and it seems to be you're in one of the two camps. You're either in Killjoys or Dark Matter. I'm grateful. I love both of them. So it's been working out quite well for me. I get the sense that the plotting that some people feel that Dark Matter has been involved in is pretty much gone. Things are very much ramping up in the universe. We have open war in going on. We have our former friend, who's now the king of Xyron, actively hunting the Raza and our group for the blink drive, which we're told doesn't work, and then we found out it does. We have android things going on, and it's I really feel like they're juggling a few different storylines and doing it pretty well. I almost wish they'd focus on one and just burn us through it, but we're not getting that right now. We're getting, as I said, a little bit of a little piece here and there. And I do have to say why am I blanking out on the actress who plays the android, even though I'm literally looking at an autographed picture of her?
Yeah.
Actually, too. She's getting a breath of... I guess acting with some of the different roles that she was in the last one, where she's a where she's playing an actual scientist who the android was created in her image, and I thought that was really fun, and I really enjoyed her with that English accent, by the way. So it's nice that she's getting some growth. I know a lot of people, my wife included, look at her and says, "Geez, that is just lousy," when they see her in pure android mode. But you say that, yet I'm starting to see some interaction with, and I still don't get these numbers straight. Three, is it?
Yes, right,
little girl. Little girl.
I'm not sure if that's five or three, but that's the problem.
No, it's five. It's five. That's right. It's five.
Yeah.
Her interactions with Five are really nice, and I get the sense that the coldness of the android persona starts to slip away as those two have their scenes together. At least it does for me, and it's really nice. I feel like they're striking up a friendship, and it's I'm enjoying the bonding of those two together. Two and three they've been putting them together a lot more, and they're playing off well of each other. It's never a romantic relationship, thankfully, and I don't see any intentions for them to go that way. And it's enjoyable. They're playing also with a lot of technology. You know, not only are we dealing with the androids, but we're finding out the nature more about Two now, of how she was created and who she is. And it's quite interesting. It's bringing in questions on, how are you alive? What constitutes your rights as a citizen and things like that we're starting to run across as we're hitting some of these android questions and stuff like that. So it's questioning things philosophically. We're dealing with betraying friends. We're dealing with how to leverage yourself during a galaxy-wide war. So like I said, I think it's keeping everything really busy. The people are becoming more likable, but I do question, regardless of what they've shown us, I can't say I feel a true depth for the people the way like I do in Killjoys, but I can read a story and not need to know what somebody likes for breakfast either. So I'm willing to overlook that, but I know a lot of people really wish that they sort of knew how some of these people ticked a little bit better.
Yeah, for me, it's that, you know, you kind of put your finger on it when you said, oh, wait, which one is which again? It's really odd to me that, and I'm a little surprised that it came down to this, but you'd think that the fact that they don't have names, that they're just named by a number, you wouldn't have any more difficulty knowing which one is which, but for whatever reason, it is just really hard to keep track of everybody for me, but...
Well, one of the things I noticed, and because they caught my eye as well, John, you know, when they're with each other, they never refer to each other by name.
Hmm.
Where a lot of other shows do that, and I don't know if that's for the audience's benefit or just because that's regular conversation, but when you're with a group of friends, you know, I don't know if I'd say, you know, I might just say, hey, and not, hey, John, or something along those lines where, you know, that sort of, they're not using the names themselves, so you don't get those references to fall off of where a lot of other shows constantly name call out. So it might be just be a writing structure too.
It might.
But I like it, and it's definitely I wouldn't call it as hard sci-fi as The Expanse, but it is a little bit more. I'd still rate it as harder than say Killjoys is.
Yeah, it is, but at the same time, I think it's interesting to see that both of them, while doing well, there is still that kind of odd contention between their fandoms that we've mentioned before. But anyway. Let's see, other shows that are on our list. We have Orphan Black, which is coming towards its swift end, I guess you could say. We have two episodes. We have Season 5, Episode 8, Guillotines Decide. And then we also have Season 5, Episode 9, One Fettered Slave. And between the two of them, you know, one episode came in pretty high, around a 9, and the other one more around a 7.75, so not as high. For Guillotines Decide, that was a really big episode, and there was actually a bit of a body count after that episode, and so I'll let Edmund's words kind of speak to that. Loved using Felix's opening to celebrate the sisterhood, especially with the latest convoluted conspiracy falling apart. Mrs. S. Ferdinand's showdown was powerful and resonant because of the shared history built up over seasons. Wish the writers hadn't felt the need to layer on new players and organizations. The Casters, Baby Farms, Designer Babies, and now P.T. Barnum. All unnecessary. Really, his name is P.T. something else, but it doesn't matter. Should have kept it to Dyad Neolution against Clone Club. Yes, I agree with that too. Some of the power of this final season is muted by the fact that seasons 3 and 4 were so off the charts crazy. So as Edmund says, though, the follow-up, the penultimate episode, One Fettered Slave, he says, the emotional heft of Mrs. S's parting undercut by the clown show that P.T. Barnum and Cody has become. Yeah, unfortunate there. Although, it does seem to be odd that it is losing steam right here at the end with so much happening off the screen because they're trying to get just the plot out of the way. So that's Orphan Black. It has just the finale that we'll talk about next time. Similarly, Turn is in its last few episodes. So we have Belly of the Beast, which is Season 4, Episode 8. And then there's Season 4, Episode 9, Reckoning. For the former episode, Edmund has to say, nice twist to Simcoe versus Abe as he chooses delivering the Yorktown intel over finishing off Simcoe. As we know he must, they fiddle with history, but they're not rewriting it completely. And then Edmund says, for the penultimate episode, a bit shocked that they wrapped up Yorktown here, leaving the finale to cover the aftermath. More shocked at the merciful end to Simcoe versus Hewlett and Woodhull. Although with 2020 hindsight and finally remembering some Canadian history, not so surprising, remarkable battle scenes for a show on its last legs and dregs of budget. Yes, they did a lot with only a couple dozen extras and lighting. They did a really amazing job with the battle in Reckoning. That was a really great episode of Turn. Not even last, because we have Game of Thrones that we'll talk about very shortly, but just wanted to kind of touch back in with Twin Peaks. We had a couple episodes, episode 12 of The Return. Let's Rock is all that I can say that they have as a explanation there, or a recap. And then for part 13, what story is that, Charlie? If you know what those references mean, then you're staying up to date with the show. These two episodes are actually pretty strong episodes. For me, it's kind of hard to condense down my comments on it, but it's all starting as we get to the end of the second act and into the beginning of the third, as things start to resolve. A lot is starting to converge back into the town of Twin Peaks, and I really like that because I noticed in particular the one episode, part 13, was really a nice commentary on nostalgia because there are some characters that they really haven't changed in the 25 years since the show, and it's actually kind of sad. So it's acknowledging that, oh yeah, these characters are exactly where you left them. Is that what you wanted? That these people never grew? That these people never got out of their troubles as much as you might have wanted them to? And so it is an interesting thing. They are starting to give answers to some questions. As I said, all the roads are converging on Twin Peaks, and I have a feeling that the last five episodes are going to be pretty packed with resolutions, at least as much resolution as David Lynch gives anything. But it's still racking up there, you know, in the eights and nines from me. I think that it had a little bit of a slump there in the middle of the season, but I think that it's bouncing back pretty nicely. But that brings us to Game of Thrones, and just some general comments before we go on. We had Season 7, Episode 3, The Queen's Justice, where Daenerys holds court, Cersei returns a gift, and Jaime learns from his mistakes. And then we had Episode 4, The Spoils of War, where Jon gives a history lesson on the Children of the Forest and the First Men to Daenerys, who later unleashes the fury of her Dothraki horde and Drogon on the Rose Road. Meanwhile, the reunions continue at Winterfell with the return of another Stark, and Cersei mulls her next move once the crown's debts are repaid to the Iron Bank. So a lot of things happening on Game of Thrones, and let's go through it a little bit here. What did you think of Jon and Daenerys finally getting to spend a little bit of time together and hang out?
Well, geez, it was everybody was waiting for it, and I'm a little let down, honestly. I expected more of a meeting of a minds and not so much of this dancing around the whole topic. You know, here's Jon. He's like, you don't understand. Everybody's going to be dead. Nothing's going to matter. Well, then swear loyalty to me. You don't understand. It doesn't matter. It's useless. Well, then swear. And it's just, I could sense John's frustration over the whole thing. Here he is. He realizes that she's a strong, valuable ally, and so he's going to make every effort possible to try and get her on his side, especially with them needing to mine the dragon glass for a while. But it's just, you know, he just feels frustrated that she doesn't get it. You know, even when he goes down to sort of give her that history lesson, she still doesn't get it. And he's just, and I think he's a little perplexed, expecting her to be more. And she's just, you know, sort of bottled up with this, this whole idea of just taking back the Seven Kingdoms when there's so much more at stake.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of that. And I think that's actually something that's meant to be a bit of a commentary on Daenerys and her values, I guess you could say, because she does struggle a bit with being held back. And I think that she is taken aback by the fact that Jon is so insistent on what his needs are versus what she wants to focus on. And yeah, there is this very big disparity. Do we focus on Westeros and getting that under control, or do we worry about this unstoppable force coming down from the north? I think that we always knew there was going to be a tension between those two, and I have a feeling more and more as we watch this play out that both situations are going to get worse before one becomes the kind of... one takes precedence over the other. It's going to get to a point where it's like, wow, we waited too late to commit one or the other, so now we're in dire straits. But I do like the fact that they are getting along. You're never quite sure where they're going to go with that, because even though they are technically, okay, it's not official yet, but they're related. We all know it.
We have not been shown that yet, John.
We haven't been shown it yet, but, you know, aunt and nephew, but that doesn't necessarily stop anything when it comes to the Targaryens. So that's actually a pretty distant relationship when it comes to Targaryen marriages. So it's, who knows if they're going in that direction. I have a feeling that they're not actually going to. I think they're going to flirt with it. No pun intended, and then that's about as far as they'll be able to go, because events are going to kind of spiral out of control.
Yes.
But it is interesting to see Tyrion's situation here, because he's, I don't know, is he starting to waver, do you think, in his support of the Targaryens?
You always have to wonder how opportunistic is he versus, you know, how much is he a true believer? And I always get the sense that he's much more opportunistic than a true believer. You could see his... what's the word I'm looking for? His how he was split when he was watching the dragons attack all his family's troops from Castle Rock. At least it seemed to me that, you know, he wondered, is he on the right side? Did he make the right decision? I sense that he felt guilt that he was involved in the whole thing. I don't know how much of a Daenerys cheerleader he actually is. I think he has more respect for Jon Snow, actually.
Yeah, he might. I think that they are kind of throwing this out there as a little bit of a red herring. I don't think he's going to turn on her, but I do think that he is going to comment on the fact that that she is going so far as to literally burn massive amounts of people alive. It is necessary, perhaps, but it is not something that is going to make her particularly popular. And maybe she does need to fight and think like a dragon, but there are costs to everything. And I think, yeah, she still has too much of that feeling of entitlement. And I think that that's what Tyrion is perhaps a bit worried about, because Jon Snow is more of a populist leader than Daenerys is. Daenerys is going based on a claim to the throne, not popularity with the people of Westeros, where Jon's entire authority comes from people handing him leadership. So I think that you're right. Tyrion is kind of looking at Jon and then going, that's what Daenerys should have if she really wants to be queen. Speaking of queens, boy, did Cersei get some good scenes in these two episodes. In particular, the first one where that revenge on Alaria Sand and the Sand Snakes. That was pretty nasty. Although well-deserved after what they did with the poison and Cersei's daughter. But I have to say that Olenna... crap!
I know, John. You want to see her?
Tyrell. Jeez. Yeah. Really, the scene between her and Jaime was a great way to end that one episode. What did you think of all that?
Oh, Donna Briggs, is it?
Diana Briggs.
She did an excellent job in that. It was very well. It was very in keeping with the character. You know, even when she, in a sense, had no power, she still wasn't. She still never felt like she relinquished anything. It was still very much a meeting of equals. And I think at first, you know, she was definitely extended that courtesy. But had she said that to Jamie any earlier on, I think that courtesy would have been gone. She obviously timed it very well so that it would match up with her dying. And I thought that was a nice bit of writing to put it that way. And as well as it was just the whole scene was timed very well that, you know, he gets this news and there's nothing he can do of it. It's just, you know, it's like bitter desserts. It's just, there's nothing to it. And I thought that was nice that they did reveal it. And also for at least for Jamie's side, it sort of does clear Tyrion. So yes. Completely. Not that I don't think Jamie necessarily believed it, but he didn't know beyond a doubt. I think he just wanted to believe that he didn't do it. But now we pretty much know that he didn't. And I wonder how that might affect Cersei's thoughts, as well as how is that going to change Tyrion's place in the Lannister family at that point? Although since he's in open rebellion with Daenerys, I don't think that much. But it still is interesting to see how Cersei reacts when she hears that news as well. It's Jaime seemed pretty devastated either way, honestly. So, but I'd like to think he was relieved.
Yes, I think in a way he was, but I think he's so conflicted about what to do with his family at this point that. Yeah, this is just adding fuel to the fire. That how is he ever going to convince Cersei of this when Cersei and he had always disagreed on Tyrion? And yeah, Cersei's kind of mad with power at this point. So speaking of another queen of sorts, because she's not technically queen of the North, but she might as well be, Sansa kind of taking on that leadership role, and the return of Bran and Arya to Winterfell. The first time we've had this many Starks in Winterfell
since episode one.
Yes, it's kind of amazing. Bran kind of being incredibly awkward.
That is, they are definitely painting him as an odd character. I'm hearing all these crazy theories thrown around that he's almost like time traveling, that he could be one of the first men. I hear, it's just, if I had a dime for every theory on Bran right now, I'd be pretty well off. But, he's definitely changed substantially ever since the last time he was joined to the Godwood.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's definitely a different person. And as he's having these conversations and he says, that's how Bran would think of things. You're like, huh? And so, yeah, it's, very interesting to see what piece he's going to fulfill in this puzzle. I'm not quite sure yet either. It's almost, I'd almost want to say, oh, would he end up as like, you know, in the Grand Sept or something like that? And you're like, no, he's not religious. He's just, I'm not really sure. So it's interesting. You know, you could almost see where like Arya might end up or Sansa, or at least have a few good directions. But Bran's got me clueless. I just can't see where he's going to end up.
Mm. I hear you. Yeah, it's. I think he's going to still be a living exposition machine, probably mm-hmm. by the end of the season, revealing who Jon's father is. You kind of get the sense that they're setting up the fact that he knows all this stuff, but that's about it. I really don't know what else he's going to, what other purpose he's going to serve. But yeah, Arya's return was really cool because I loved the fact that she had that sparring match with Brienne. That was a great little scene there. Just her swordsmanship and
you mean when she with... when she kicked her butt? Is that
yes.
what you
yes. that's
and just... little feather I'm sorry, little finger paying a very close attention to that
yeah.
as well.
What are your thoughts on that? What do you think he's thinking?
I think he's definitely trying to measure everyone up, especially as they're quote as they're returning in a sense. And I think that shocked him. I suppose he remembered her from, geez, it seems a long time ago, but I'll say as a little girl who is, you know, playing with that little dagger per se around, you know, around in the courtyard there. And now he's taking on and defeating a warrior who I think even Littlefinger has a grudging respect for. Mm. So definitely she's someone to be watched and cautious against. And he's always one who, how did he put it the other episode? Always plans for the worst. And so I think plans are definitely being worked up for Arya after that sword fight. And I'd be surprised if he would stay that close to her. Or he might just try to win her over, feeling that she'd be a good ally. So we'll have to see where that goes. But regardless, I felt he was impressed and slightly afraid of how well proficient she was.
Mm. Yeah, I just loved the sheer joy she had in actually being home and being able to just have that kind of interaction. And you could see the accumulation of her swordsmanship, her skills from being with the House of Black and White, and everything just coming to, you know, all together. And yeah, I'm hoping that she gets to be a major force going into the last several episodes, because if anyone deserves to survive all this, it's Arya.
So. Well, you know, and as another side note, it harkens back to one of her first scenes we saw with her, actually, yeah. where she is sparring on that same ground. So it's sort of it's completed the circle to some extent when you see her there, not only fighting, but winning this time, where she did not win the last time, if I recall correctly, when she was facing Jon Snow. Mm.
Quite a turnaround over time. It really shows you how the years have changed. Of course, we find out that what happened with Jorah and his cure. And I guess he is now on his way to go meet up with Daenerys again. I thought that moved a little bit quickly. I was kind of surprised that they didn't take their time with that more.
That he wasn't being visited a few times before all the cure was done.
It seemed too fast for something that wasn't supposed to be curable. It's almost like when you remember on Arrow when Felicity was supposedly paralyzed and then four episodes later she was fine again. That kind of stuff. It just seemed like, wow, they went a long way to just have Sam do this in the space of an episode.
Well, I guess, they did treat it as such in story. I didn't feel like we had jumped a tremendous amount of time. It seemed like Sam had done that all in one long night.
Hmm.
Although, obviously, I think a few days had gone by, because your skin would not be healed no matter what Sam put on it right after you peel off that many layers. So some time, I guess, had to go by. But so maybe they just, you know, condensed it. It seemed to me like it was done in a single night and then he was just healing afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, time is getting a little wonky here with these episodes. Of course, we also have... let's see. What else was there in these episodes? I guess that they're really getting to... I guess the one thing was that we did get that big battle with Daenerys. And I'm really glad that they finally showed us that. We've been waiting for a battle with the dragon involved for a long time. But it is especially interesting... when you have, in the previous episode, you had the invasion of Casterly Rock and the sacking of Highgarden, and it was all off screen for all intent purposes.
Oh, talk about saving budget. Yeah, that's what I was like, oh, wow, they took all of Castle Rock 2 without much. Well, I mean, I guess we did get some of the scenes, but it still felt massively abbreviated.
Yes. Yeah, so they made up for it by having an extremely long battle sequence with the Lannisters and Daenerys. So that at least was something. What did you think of that? Was it worth the budget to save that money? I thought that it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've talked with some other friends about this too, and I mean the dragons were nice and all. It just I think they would have made more of an impact if they just devastated and were done versus all these passes taking out 20 to 30 guys at a time kind of thing. I just I wish they were shown as a I don't know, more of a doomsday almost kind of, like, not that they, taking out 20 to 30 men down to ash isn't doomsday, but what I'm saying, I almost wanted them to seem like they were more of a, just literally just, they went by and there was no one left. Something even worse.
Yeah, so. I guess you could say that it kind of,
We've been hearing about the dragons and they're completely unstoppable once once they get on the field. Yet we saw them. We saw one take a hit. They were striking down dozens of men at a time, but they didn't necessarily, finish the battle immediately or anything like that. It dragged on what I felt was for, a reasonable amount of time. And like I said, they were able to fell one of the dragons at least for a short time. And it showed me that they're not the invincible trump all card that they have been portrayed as. Not that they're not a very devastating weapon, but they're not untouchable,
which I guess is good too in my mind, because if they were effectively unstoppable, then you never would have gotten it would have been
I think I would have liked to seen them, let's do one scene where they just devastate everything. So that's what we expect
yes.
every time.
I hear what you mean, is that they kind of pulled the trigger on that weapon too quickly.
Yes, no pun intended. Right. But yeah. I'd love to see him as a devastating power. Then all of a sudden, they're just going to do the next thing to this army too. And then also, whoa, wait a minute. But we got that all combined. As you said, they're squeezing things just like Jorah. They're squeezing. It seems like they squeezed this whole thing together as well.
Yeah, and they are definitely pushing towards some kind of end point for this shorter season, and you got to imagine that, we're less than 10 episodes away from the end now. We've only got a handful of episodes left. They are definitely rushing through story, and there is a little bit of consternation on the part of some, and I definitely get it that you had such a nice leisurely pacing, almost too leisurely sometimes in the beginning seasons, and now it feels like a lot of that meat that we would have gotten once upon a time is getting lost because they're just kind of driving to the end. And I think there is a bit of miscalculation there where they did want to just define an end date and be done. And it's also extremely expensive, so I get that. But I do think that maybe HBO might have been correct when they were the ones who were saying, hey, we should get two full seasons, not just 13 episodes total. They should get 20 episodes before the end. And yeah, that extra 7 might have actually been worthwhile now that we see the actual final product. It's not horrible. We're still enjoying it immensely. I mean, let's see. Queen's Justice came in at an 8.7, and The Spoils of War came in at a 9.5. That's probably the best score that we've had on an episode in a while, probably since the end of last season. So I definitely think that the show is still doing well. It's just that, there is a little bit of the extra that is getting lost along the way. Just some comments from the rest of the Critical Myth gang on these episodes. For The Queen's Justice, Nadine gave it a 9.5, saying the strongest episode thus far, absolutely remarkable and almost perfect. Just you wait, Nadine, because you have comments on the next episode. Henry gave that episode an 8.5, saying while Cersei may currently have the upper hand, and that's without mentioning the cruel, slow torture that she inflicts upon and imprisoned Alaria and Tyene, poisoning Tyene in a similar manner to how Alaria killed Myrcella, I just can't escape the nagging feeling that her comeuppance may be at hand. Well, we'll see soon. Edmund says of that episode, giving it an 8.5, definitely felt odd to have Dany's plans fall apart so perfunctorily and so much off camera. This is not a show subject to later season's budgetary life support. Much of the action has been people standing around and talking. Well, Dame Rig Elena can certainly make that memorable, and Cersei's justice was as well. It's starting to feel a tad rushed. So definitely some of them seeing the same thing. But as far as the spoils of war goes, Nadim gave it a 10, saying thanks to those final 15 minutes, the spoils of war is one of those all-time great episodes, mind-blowing television, ladies and gents. Henry gave it a 9.5, saying, I love the focus of this episode. Even with the acceleration of the story, the show takes time to stay and build on one particular subplot, and it happens to be my favorite part. Edmund gave it a 9.5, saying, wow. But as good as Daenerys taking Lady Olenna's advice was, why didn't Bronn make a beeline for the Scorpion the moment they realized it was what was sweeping in on them? Well, okay, a bit stunned and paralyzed, perhaps. And the possibility of a white ice dragon is looming its head now. While they are burning through story points like wildfire, dragon's breath, well, they're still finding some time for reflection, a la the sisters' reunion in the crypt. So, not everybody is feeling like they are losing some of these little moments, but I think that definitely the acceleration is being felt.
Oh, I mean, when you look at what's cut from the books, from the original source material, to what we end up in the television range, and we're thinking, oh, geez, they're cutting the heck out of it already. Now we're filling, they're cutting the heck out of the television show, which is even more.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are a lot of people that are feeling like we're getting the Cliff Notes version of the ending now, which I guess makes sense if we feel like we're going to actually get the book version. But I'm still not sure that's going to happen. So we'll see, though. Any other thoughts on these two episodes of Game of Thrones? Since that's kind of our big ticket item right now. Doesn't seem like it.
Well, no, I'm just fine. I'm finding the Onion Knight is I'm thinking and I'm comparing and contrasting his advice and counsel to Tyrion's towards Daenerys, trying to see just like, are they really almost doing the exact same thing? And it feels a lot like it. Like both of them are almost on the same page. Oh, you have to be patient. They're worth spending time to try and get onto your side. As I listen to them, they both seem to be saying the exact same thing to the opposite person.
That's not a, that's not entirely, a bad observation, because you almost feel like the advisors are more aligned than the leaders are. And what can you do about that, right? It's, one would hope you'd be able to do something about it, but
oh, and I don't think I'm jumping ahead. Was this the scene when during one of these episodes was when Jon was actually introduced to Daenerys?
Yes, that was in the Queen's Justice, I think, at the very beginning.
Okay, yeah, when Daenerys' speaker gives this long line, Queen of the Andals, this this is Jon Snow. I enjoyed the big versus the small.
Yes, and that yet was fun. It's pretty much the same. So yes, good episodes all around. Good TV all around. These are good shows that are worth watching. And even if we glossed over them a little bit here and there, obviously these are the shows that we're focused on. There's good things to say about all of them. So certainly next time when we come back in a couple weeks with episodes, we're going to have more big events in Westeros and Game of Thrones. We're going to have two series finales for Turn and Orphan Black. And yeah, we're actually going to have, I believe, the return of The Last Ship coming soon. And like I said, we're actually going to maybe get our first looks at The Defenders and so forth. So we have a few things coming up here as we get towards the latter half of August. So, Gary, any last thoughts before we wrap up our week?
No, just echoing what you said, that Game of Thrones is going way too fast. And it's interesting. We've had busier summers before, and I wonder if this is some adjustment to this whole year-round programming that happens. Maybe they're finding out that the middle of the summer isn't the best time to run a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Game of Thrones being delayed, we'd have even less to talk about. So
yeah, so
it does seem like the networks are kind of going reality heavy, or just, I know there are other shows that are on, but they're just not as high as profile. I mean, some people have asked, you know, are you going to talk about Preacher? Quite frankly, I wasn't impressed enough by the first season to watch the second season. So and there's a couple other shows like The Mist. Well, it's gotten extremely bad comments about it. So not really something that I'm interested in getting into right now. But for right now, the shows that we're talking about are the cream of our crop as far as we're concerned. And like you said, right now, it seems like the networks overall, cable or otherwise, are really just taking a bit of a breather. And maybe that leaves some room for even the streaming services to, you know, for people to catch up. So, all right, that's it for this week. We will be back in a couple. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.